Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with TFT's radio show, and this is the new show. This is the SOS Chat Kid Radio that I've been talking about for so long. I've got my first kid, and that's kind of insulting, so I'm going to call him a public school student. His name is Alex, and he agreed to come on the show for the next half hour with me, and we're going to talk about the reform movement, but from an actual student's perspective. So, Alex, thank you so much for coming, and why don't you tell folks just a little bit about who you are and what you're up to?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm fortunate enough to go to a school that has no grades and multi-age classrooms in the Rocky Mountain region, and I'm fortunate enough to be here for about 10 years. I'm a sophomore in high school right now, and we as a school are developing leaders, and I'm fortunate enough to be part of this and be part of the education movement.
So you are a leader in a student-centered sort of education movement that you have begun. We were talking about it briefly before the show, and you have a couple of sort of specific concerns about the current education reform movement. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And could you just maybe pick one of them and tell our listeners what it is you see as sort of the one big problem with the current reform movement?
Right now I think the current problem with the current reform movement is the output of it, the message that's being across. I know for me personally in my state that the main message has been opting out of the standardized testing, and unfortunately it hasn't been successful. It hasn't changed much in our state, and right now the message is being developed, but it just needs to be a little bit more direct in a positive way.
So you're saying that your group is trying to get folks to opt out, and you have not been very successful. Is that what you just basically said?
No, not my group. The groups that I've been seeing in the state of in my state, and the organizations I've been affiliated with in the past have been having the message of opting out of standardized testing.
I see.
And I haven't found that to be a clear movement. It hasn't shooken much. It's only made people in the Department of Education, it seems to be a little bit more angry and tries to stop further movement with legislation.
I see. So in favor of opting out, it sounds like, but you're not necessarily in favor of that being how we go about sort of countering this reform movement. Would that be a more accurate way to say it?
Yes, exactly that.
And so you've been affiliated with some of these groups that were pushing opt out, and there's still a whole bunch of people pushing for it, and I'm actually for opting out. I just advised a parent the other day that she could opt her kid out. She didn't realize. But let me ask you this. Why should people opt out? Is there a problem with the big test?
What happens when a student takes a standardized test is that they're looked at as a letter, proficient, unsatisfactory, partially proficient, or advanced. And what that has happened is it's allowed students to be a product. And when students are a product, we're obviously not taught as individuals and we're not taught to like skills. The ideal with opting out is stating that I, the parent, do not believe in this and my student will not be looked at as a product. They will be looked at as a human. And I completely agree with that. It's just the avenues of creating the actual reform, I feel like, do need a change because it hasn't worked in the past couple of years.
Now, you said you're a junior, is that right?
I'm a sophomore.
You're a sophomore, sorry. You might be old enough, I don't know. Let me ask you. The No Child Left Behind law that pretty much put these tests in place, you know, a decade ago. Before NCLB, classrooms, students, teachers, the whole thing was pretty different. Are you old enough to have a memory of what it was like inside a classroom before No Child Left Behind in the high stakes test, and now what it's like after, or are you just too young? You might be too young.
Well, I know for me personally, in the type of school I go to, which is the non-traditional school of grading and seven classes a day, we are actually in the midst of being affected by No Child Left Behind and the education laws that have been recently passed. I mean, we were able to go on our overnight trips to all over the entire world with not much of an issue. We, you know, just fill out the forms at the district and, you know, make sure that we are safe. But unfortunately, what's happened with the No Child Left Behind law and the laws that have been affecting my school and how our district is handling it is that we're no longer allowed to do that. We have a certain amount of hours that we must be in the classroom per week, which has allowed stress. And for me personally, I've been able to have the effect of the No Child Left Behind consequences of inside the classroom, which has been extremely unfortunate for the students and I know myself.
Could you just be maybe a little more specific when you talk about the effects in the classroom? Do you see, you talked about the curriculum, the things you're learning. Do you see that as becoming more narrow, less chance to sort of talk about things, maybe to go off on a tangent? Is that sort of stuff just not allowed anymore?
What I've noticed is a script, not necessarily how actors are, but we must be at a certain chapter in our textbook at a certain date. We're not allowed to be able to hold back or advance throughout the book because we have to be at a certain place at a certain time, which has been unfortunate for us.
Hold on, because this is really important, I think. Why? Give me your reason for why you believe you and your fellow students should not be locked into this, everybody do this chapter, now we're going to move on to the next chapter. Why should you be able to bounce around a little bit? What advantage does that have for you, the student?
It allows me to pursue more. It allows me to adventure out in something I'm passionate about. And what's happened is we are almost put in a box. Every single student needs to be the exact same and be in the exact same place, whereas there are some students in my class that need that extra time to understand a math problem, or as for myself and a couple of my other colleagues, is that, you know, we're ready to be more advanced. We're ready to take on the next problem or take on the next step within our equations in our classrooms. And what has happened is that we've been slowed down.
Let me ask, you do not have to answer. Do you have a little brother or sister? Or
yes,
cousins?
Yes,
or so you know, I'm sure, as the big brother, that when little ones are excited or curious, they're ripe to learn, right? So when you're taking your little bro to the zoo or whatever and he's suddenly fascinated by the elephants, well, that's the time to teach them everything about elephants. Are you suggesting that in your classroom that when you, as, you know, an advanced student, you're in high school, I'm not talking little kids, now I'm talking you, but are you telling me that when you sense within yourself a sudden sort of, hey, I'm curious about that and I'd like to go ahead and look at that, are you telling me that you're stifled, that you're stopped from doing that, so you're your curiosity is sort of smashed?
Yeah, and it's almost that's what the expectation is, or what it's hoped to be, is that you're at this one steady pace. I believe education is supposed to be allow students to pursue what they're interested in. And if I'm interested in math, I don't feel like there should be a way for me to stop me from interesting, be more into that, or, you know, do more research or get ahead in the textbook. I feel like I should be allowed to pursue more and learn way more about, you know, just one subject or multiple subjects that I'm interested in, because that's what education's about, is to pursue people's interests. And I feel like that's the main point, is why we're here, is that we are here to learn what we're interested in. And once we're roadblocked therefore, once we've fallen behind, we've lost interest, and that can lose interest in other subjects in school in general.
Dude, why aren't you an education professor? Because that statement, that statement that you just made, is the argument for our side. The fact that kids, and here it is coming straight out of the mouth of one, kids themselves are telling us that if you crush their curiosity, or that if you don't provide a way for them to sort of feed their curiosity, you're doing damage. And that's what you're saying is happening. You're saying your curiosity is being smashed, your curiosity is not being fed. In fact, you're being damaged. Is that kind of basically what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, and what has happened has led into larger consequences, and one of which is dropping out. I mean, we have almost damaged 10 years of students going to school because we have stopped the curiosity and we have stopped the pursuit of being interested in something and having this everyone must be the same set mind. I mean, the one size
right.
fits all does not work.
Right. Let me sort of take a different tack now. I want to talk about your perception of teachers, because obviously in any school, sort of the two most important populations are the students and the teachers. They're the biggest populations in the school. They're the ones that sort of have the biggest impact in every way. So from the perspective of a student still, is there anything you can tell us about let me put it this way. Me, as a teacher, I felt when I was in the classroom, my principal would come in and sometimes I taught little kids. My principal would come in and tell me I need to have something on the board that I didn't have, or that the way the kids hung up their pictures on the wall should be done some other way, and I should maybe post some little standards all around the room so my little second graders can find out what, you know, what their ELA standard actually is, which they couldn't read anyway. So teachers were made to jump through hoops and crazy things that they know don't do anything for kids. I mean, half of the things my principal told me to do had nothing to do with the kids. It had to do with me adhering to some law or some form of pedagogy that my principal would be able to walk into my room and then see if I'm doing the right things. Not that she knows if they're right or not, but she could just easily walk in and see. From your perspective, have you ever been in a classroom where you see a teacher doing things that sort of makes no sense and you're pretty sure the teacher's doing it to please the principal?
Not in my school. I strongly believe that teachers are the least appreciated profession in the entire country, and when I feel like they need to be the most important, most appreciated. I mean, they're the ones developing the future. I know for me that every single one of my teachers gives their heart out in every single class, and they have a goal for me to appreciate what I'm learning and to learn what I'm learning, and that is their main goal. And, you know, as for me and siblings I have, and then colleagues I have in other schools, it's almost the exact opposite, and that the teachers are literally just trying to get by with what they're being mandated to do. But I feel like teachers already have the expectation of, I want to do best for this student because this student can go on to do many great things. And it's almost like these mandates and No Child Left Behind is taking that away, which has been absolutely unfortunate and has been restricting not just the teachers but the classrooms too. And I do believe that teachers are the most important profession here because they're the ones, like I said, they're the ones developing our future. So I feel like not only should we give the teachers a pat on the back, not only should I believe we should put the money we're putting into our testing into teachers' salaries, but I also believe that we should let back on how much mandates we put on the classroom, because the teachers have so many great ideas, and they're the ones that are professionals. They're hired for a reason, and they should be the one authentically evaluating our students.
Okay, Alex, I'll vote for you. When are you running for something?
I've had a teacher inspire me to be in the political realm, and because of this one individual teacher, I do plan to run for office soon.
I hope you do. You're very well spoken, which is hard when you're just a sophomore, and you seem to have a really solid grasp on this stuff, and it doesn't sound, you know, I do talk to a lot of people, as you know, and a lot of people, they just say the words that they've heard many, many times, and it's mostly adults, and they just blah, 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 and, you know, hearing it from you, and hearing it sort of from your personal perspective, I'm hoping makes it more real for the adults out there who were trying to convince that, no, teachers aren't the problem. Let me ask you, all the adults out there, I mean, the reform movement basically says that the reason there is an achievement gap and the reason our impoverished kids do so poorly is because of all the crappy teachers. Does that make sense to you? Is that your experience?
I don't believe there are crappy teachers. I mean, it's by far not the teacher's fault. It's either the student not caring or it's the parent lack of involvement at home. It's the parent lack of involvement of encouragement of having them go through school and showing them the importance of school and how once you graduate from college, once you graduate from high school, you need to go to college to get that degree to succeed. It's not the teachers. I do believe it's the lack of involvement from the parents.
Okay, let me ask you another question that's been on all the adults' minds. A lot of adults, Michelle Rhee, sort of especially, you know who she is, right?
Yeah.
And you know about merit pay, right?
Yes.
So we teachers, when we hear merit pay, when we hear someone saying, we'll give you an extra $10,000 if you can raise these kids' scores, we all think to ourselves, what, do you think we've been holding back on teaching these kids, waiting for an extra bonus? Do you believe there are teachers out there who are not giving everything they've got because they're not getting paid enough?
I don't believe that. I don't believe the teachers are there because of the pay. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. The teachers are not paid well enough. I mean, the average salary I know in my state is around $35,000 to $40,000, and that is just simply not enough.
Right.
Once you become a teacher and you're in that profession, you're not in it for the money. You're in there to inspire students to be better off in their future and after high school and after college.
Then why are all these grown-ups out there saying that these teachers just care about their paycheck and they want to sit in their chair, read the newspaper, and hand out worksheets and just wait until they can retire? You don't see that? You don't see your teachers doing that?
No, not at all. They're so interactive in my classroom. I think it's almost the idea of what the media has put out into what teachers are. I mean, if you look at cartoons of The Simpsons and all that, you see the teacher kicking back and reading a newspaper and not participating. It's because of the media, I really do feel like, is the one undermining the teachers. I mean, and also some documentaries on education, for me personally, I know Waiting for Superman was not the ideal film I would have wanted to see about education because they undermine the teachers, and especially with what's happened in Washington, D.C., and how they were going to give teachers bonuses if they weren't in the teachers' union. There we go. To drop out of the teachers' union.
Right.
That type of thing in the media that's really undermining the teachers and that has created a stereotype of teachers not caring.
And you don't believe it. You say that's nonsense.
Absolutely.
I agree with you. Okay, well, since you mentioned it, the adults also love to talk about unions and tenure. Do you have any idea what kind of experience your teachers had, and could you talk about the differences in your different teachers, you know, compare the ones who were brand new to the ones who had 5, 10, 15 years of experience? Is that even possible for you? Okay, go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The teachers that have been part of the school or have been teaching for more than 10 years understand what they're doing to me. They understand exactly how to connect with students, and they've had the experience of interacting with different types of students and different types of backgrounds that they're really able to teach. And whereas newer teachers are developing those skills, they're really developing that. And to have tenure, to have the parent, the teacher's job secure allows for me and my colleagues to feel secured about our teachers and to know that they will always be there to support us when we are needed. Whereas if we did not have that and we knew that there was a chance to lose one of our valued faculty members here the following year, it would absolutely heartbreak us. And it's just discouraging to think that some states are trying to make the move and that's getting rid of tenure and getting rid of the teachers union. I feel like teachers really need that, and not just the teachers, the students need that for security of their teacher.
Okay. One of the things that the reformers are pushing is an end to LIFO, last in, first out. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so one of the union tenure rules, you know, the unions negotiate with the district for the rules, and one of the rules is that most union states, there are some states that do not have unions, but the union states decided that when schools get their money mostly from the state, not from the feds, but from the state. So when your state has a budget crisis, they often don't give money to the schools to balance their budget. So the school was expecting, you know, $1 billion, and it turns out they're getting much less than that. And when that happens, schools have to cut costs. And what they have, the only way to cut huge costs like that is to cut very expensive things, not the copy machine, not the phones, but a few teachers, you know, tens of thousands of dollars need to get cut. So they put in a policy called last in, first out. So if you're the first year brand new teacher, you just got finished with college and you're a brand new teacher and you don't have tenure yet and your school district finds itself short on money because the state didn't give it any money, the school district has to choose, you know, 5, 10, 15 teachers to lay off. Now, if the state gets the money, and this often happens, the schools end up getting the money. They thought they weren't going to get it, but they end up getting it, and they're able to hire these teachers back. And it's not like these teachers got fired. It's just that they're the new ones. They have the least seniority. They were the last ones hired, so they have to be the first ones to be laid off. And the reason that policy exists is basically for the reason you said, the veterans know what they're doing. If you get rid of the veterans, nobody's going to know what they're doing. You're going to have a bunch of brand new teachers. So if you understood all that, let me just ask you a simple question. Do you think that policy of laying off, not firing because they suck, just laying them off because the school district needs the money, do you agree that laying off the newest teachers makes sense? Or do you think that we should look at student scores and teacher evaluations and maybe kind of pick the teacher with the, you know, the worst evaluation and let them go? Is that too hard a question?
It's definitely tricky, but I'm going to do my best to answer it. It's tricky because obviously I'm not in that teacher position. I don't have to experience that. I know of a couple of teachers that we just brought in this year because several teachers needed to go out of state for a greater experience that they were going to have. You know, they're obviously going to be the ones that our district chooses the first to go. And what's unfortunate is that they can't look at the bigger picture. They can't look at what could we cut with spending. If we cut with spending, with standardized testing, I feel like we can save the teachers. Personally, as far if it comes to the last scenario of cutting a teacher, I believe students need to evaluate their teachers. That's what we do at my school, is that we evaluate our teachers and the teachers evaluate us. And if it's a consistent across the board of this teacher is not necessarily supporting students or not necessarily understanding what they're teaching, I feel like that needs to be looked at first. I don't think it needs to be the newest teacher. I think it needs to be the one that needs the most improvement right now. And that's what happened with one of our teachers here, is that we've written so many evaluations, and this one particular teacher consistently had, I wish they did this, I wish they did this, that we asked them to not teach that subject anymore. And what's happened is that teacher is now doing other things that they're an expert on, and they're doing a fantastic job. It's just the other things that they did have a degree in, but not have the support to teach that subject. was released from those dues. But really, I think before cutting teachers, we need to look at the overall spending of the admissions office, the district spending, and the generous testing.
Right. And in these scenarios, I should probably tell you, these scenarios come kind of immediately, and the district has, you know, 3 weeks to cut, you know, $500,000. And so it's not like there's a whole lot of time, you know. So the way that every company deals with budget crunches is to fire people. That's just, you know, that's what Mitt Romney is famous for with his company. That's what they did. They'd go buy companies and then fire everybody to raise profits. So it was probably a sort of an unfair. I mean, I hear what you're saying about kids evaluating teachers, and that's actually something that a lot of us have suggested be part of a teacher's evaluation, as opposed to a principal walking in and checking off a few things on a clipboard in 5 minutes, which is kind of what it is now. It should be lots and lots of measures. First of all, the kids should have some input. Second of all, it shouldn't be based on the test scores. It should be based on maybe portfolios of your student work, you know, so that the evaluator can see, you know, deeply what's going on. Interesting. So you're a fan let me ask you this. Would you feel comfortable basing a teacher's job on student evaluations?
I don't think that should be solely it. There might be just a group of students in one classroom trying to sabotage one teacher. I think it needs to be, again, across the board from all teachers. I think what needs to happen is with student evaluations, they look at the evaluation of the students, what can be improved, and if it's something consistent across the board with most students giving this evaluation, then we get the resources to support that situation or support that issue so we can improve the classroom and improve the teacher's skill that, if they don't have already, we can improve that instead of making the severe cut of cutting a teacher, because everyone's going to value every single teacher, and to think about cutting a teacher is almost heartbreaking to me.
Okay. Let me ask you this in our last 2 minutes and 45 seconds. What makes a good teacher? Just tell me, what is a good teacher?
To me, a good teacher is when you have an individual relationship with the student. Is when they understand exactly where the student is at in their subject, and they can figure out what they can do to support them. Having that one-on-one time, to have that social time with the teachers, that is really what's going to develop the relationship and really develop a great bond between the student and the teacher, to have that good relationship with the teacher in the classroom. We have this advisory program.
I'm sorry, I want to interrupt. I want you to tell me, why is that relationship important?
You know, research has shown is that once students have a third adult outside
of their
family.
Alex, you are this. Tell me you personally. Don't tell me research. We want to hear from you. What, really, Alex, value a relationship with your teacher?
It shows that they care about me. It shows exactly that they care about where I'm at and how I'm successful, and it shows that they are truly looking at what I'm doing and my performance, and which makes me want to try harder in my subject and in their classes.
So it makes you feel
cared.
You feel cared about, you feel valued.
Yes.
You feel validated as a human being.
Yes.
Would you say that, let's say there's a kid in your class who, for whatever reason, is cognitively having incredible difficulty, maybe an incredibly low IQ, maybe there's some developmental issues, and that kid's just never going to do well on the test, ever, ever, ever. That's just not going to happen. But inside that class, the kid is making a connection and growing socially and becoming confident and blah, blah, all that social stuff. Is that teacher a success, even if they didn't move that kid up in terms of test scores?
If the teacher shows interaction with the student and showing that they are giving the resources to the student to improve in their subject and to improve in interacting, absolutely. I feel like the standardized test is not the way to evaluate students or teachers. I feel like the way to evaluate students and teachers is by the professionals, the teachers, and having given the resources to have that one-on-one connection and given the resources to support the individual.
Okay. I know we only have 10 seconds to be live, but we have an extra 15 minutes, and there is a caller on the line. Can I take the call, Alex?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Caller, you are on the line, 631 area code.
Hey, how you doing, man? It's Cool Veg.
Sid. Hey, Sid, how are you?
Yeah, I just managed to walk in and catch it. I had to go to the pharmacy for a few things, and I said, I know if I catch it, I can listen in the archives while you guys are doing it. As long as
you've been listening. So you've heard a little bit already. You realize Alex is my student.
Before I left, and I was trying to get back in time, you know, to catch it. So I caught a little bit, and I said, let me just call this last minute to see if I could get on. So if you guys are going to do an extra 15 minutes, right, in the archive?
Well, we have 15 minutes, so let's go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, he really, you know, it's. You know, the pitches you have are always great, and they make a lot of sense because with teaching children about the war, making them support war in many of the schools, with especially, you know, high school with the No Child Left Behind, recruiting them. You know, a while back, recruiters were chased off of campuses, you know, and laws were enacted to where they could not go onto campuses. And what I realize is for young kids, you know, that have been grown up with technology and media and always watching an electronic screen, is I let them know is to watch the Media Education Foundation, especially teachers like yourself, myself. We need to purchase these or obtain them, you know, and give them away freely because they have important documentaries like It's Not Just a Game, about how sports is totally political. Actually, it was created for a political agenda. And if you watch any games, like they'll come out and have military recruiting booths at sports games. So if children grow up knowing this, and we know, look, there's no need for us to go to any sports games, and we create our own, that will give them so much power to say, wait a second, you're telling me that we're going to create a sport that's just as good or better than baseball or football, and all of us are going to participate in this. That bond with that adult and other adults that do these things, I mean, there's going to be a feeling there where the kids are going to say, you know what, I want to know you when I'm 40 and you know, you're 60, and we're going to grow together on this planet because we keep educating the alcohol one. The advertising for cigarettes, the educational one they have about women, you know, trying to, you know, the slim, pale, blonde version of what beauty's supposed to be. Nothing wrong with pale blonde people, but when it comes to what you see today on shows like The Doctors and all of that with the new technology of you can turn your brown eyes blue, you know, and people are doing this. And just to have that on shows, explain to kids that, you see, that's not a show. That's a deceptive advertisement, propaganda, to get people to say, you know what? Yeah, maybe I should turn my brown eyes blue because, you know, I've been told all my life that that color's better. You know, not to say it's a pretty color if you're born with it, and brown is also a beautiful color for eyes. But, no, I should aspire to have blue eyes. Where's the technology to turn blue eyes brown? It does not exist.
So Sid, let Alex is with us. Alex, what do you have to say? What do you have to say about all this that's coming from Sid?
You know, I agree that sports has allowed this competitive feeling. I know for me that I'm actually the captain of my ultimate Frisbee team, and one thing that I really try to push with the team is to accept everyone for who they are, and that we are a team and that we care about each other because we are going to spend a lot of time. And what this recruitment from these teams, and then, you know, like how you said, with the military, I feel like what that has happened is that it's almost taken the joy of the sport and the joy of being with teammates and doing something you enjoy outside of school away. And I feel like that we really should, you know, reevaluate that and just make sure that the students are really enjoying what they're doing and enjoying being with the people who they're with and not having that discrimination against other students on their team, and, you know, making sure that they are being respected.
Yes. One thing I'd like you to please remember and spread to all students, that you and other people your age, you're the people that can make this a warless world. The pioneers of a warless world of the young men and women who refuse military service. Please remember that. Write it down. They'll try to say Albert Einstein said it, but it's a lie. It doesn't matter who said it. It's the fact that I was a teenage soldier. In high school, I was a soldier. I joined up. I was gone at 17, still in the 12th grade. They didn't mind that. They lied and said I graduated. I got my GED in 2006, and I've been teaching for over 10 years. So you don't need to graduate. You don't need to go to college. Not saying that you shouldn't, but just remember that if everybody who's 18 doesn't go in the Army and refuses military service, the youngest person next year in the Army will be 19, and then next year it'll be 20. And the only way to get people to go in front of a bullet is if they don't understand and they're young and haven't been taught. So when the youngest person in the Army is 22, 24, that you will be the pioneer of a warless world. We're too old to do it. You are the future.
All right, Sid, I'm going to let you go. I want to thank you, as usual, for calling in and lending us your voice. Alex, that's Sid. He's called in to a couple of my shows, and he sort of sounds crazy, but he's not. In fact, I think he's the smartest guy I've ever heard. But he does freak me out a little bit.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and that's what we're taught here in my school, is that it's about peace, love, and happiness, not war, fight, and hate.
Yeah, man. And if more people sounded like Sid, this would be a better world. All right,
absolutely.
Well, look, I have my own high school kid to go pick up, so I'm going to let you go. Alex, I don't know how to thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and doing this. Would you be willing to do it again?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for letting me on.
No, I thank you. We will be in touch, my friend. So
awesome.
I'm gonna let you go now. Thanks a lot, Alex. So there you go. There's the show, ladies and gentlemen. Alex, the public school kid, student, sorry. Wow. What a bright kid. Holy cow. I really appreciated that. And Sid, Cool Veg, on YouTube, go find him with a K. KOOLVEDGE or something like that. Cool Veg. The guy is the guy's right. I love everything he says. I'm so glad he found me. I wish he were in charge of everything. But we can at least listen to him and work towards it. And with students like Alex out there, I have a feeling that our future may just be bright after all. So thank you all for listening. There will be, I've got another show coming up on the 6th with a principal down in Florida, Brian Killeen. I think that's his name. Gosh, I hope so. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening. Over and out.